construction, perhaps as soon as early September. So we've been working very closely with other city partners, including the Office of Civic Engagement and Immigrant Affairs and community advocates, to try to prepare our response as a city if and when that rulemaking is released. So we want to make sure that we can very quickly get information out to the community to try to counteract any chilling effect that that rule change is likely to have on immigrants who are in need of safety net benefits. So that's an issue that we will again keep you apprised on, to make sure that we are doing all we can to ensure that people don't disenroll from benefits out of a sense of fear about how it might affect their immigration status. Moving on now to a few state updates, I just want to update you quickly on two bills that are being sponsored by CWDA, our statewide association. Two bills in recent weeks moved off of what is called the suspense file. Suspense is when you have a bill that has a significant cost to implement. They go on suspense so that they can be considered. Many bills never move off of suspense due to cost implications, but two CWDA bills did move forward recently in the process. One is AB 2043. This is a child welfare bill that would create a California coordinated response system modeled on successful systems in other states. And what this would basically be is a 24/7 hotline that children and youth in the foster care system or their caregivers could call if they were experiencing emotional, behavioral, or other difficulties that were overwhelming to the family and that threatened to disrupt care. And upon receiving one of those calls, the county would then be required to dispatch a mobile response team 24/7 to go in, assess the situation, and offer whatever additional support they can to the family. So we're pleased that that's moving forward. The second bill, also sponsored by CWDA, is AB 2111. This is a bill, actually, that I'm pleased to say the idea for this legislation originated here in San Francisco. We proposed this legislative idea to CWDA. And what this would do is change the rules about how long immigrants can receive CalWORKs benefits. CalWORKs cash assistance. Right now, if you have a sponsored immigrant family who claims indigence, meaning they say that their sponsor in this country is no longer providing them with financial support, that family can receive CalWORKs benefits for 12 months, but after 12 months, they would be discontinued. This bill would allow for that, what's called the indigent exception, to be extended beyond the 12 months so that that family could continue to receive cash assistance. This would bring the CalWORKs rules in line with the CalFresh rules. So another positive law change that potentially moving forward.
Who makes the decision if it can be extended?
It would be, well, county eligibility workers would be the one reviewing the family's application, making that determination. Okay, moving on now to just a couple of local updates. Of course, Mayor Lyndon Reed has now been in office for a couple of months. Over the last few weeks, she announced a number of staffing appointments in her office, but I would say the office is still very much in transition mode at this point. The mayor's designated chief of staff has not started in that role yet and won't be taking that role on until November. So things are still very much in transition mode. I'm guessing that many of you saw yesterday's newspaper announcement that the city's longtime public health director, Barbara Garcia, has resigned from her role. Her resignation was quickly followed by a statement from the mayor's office thanking her for her years of service and announcing that a new search for a public health director will begin immediately. So we'll be, of course, very interested to see who that is, given how closely we partner with the Department of Public Health. And then finally, shortly after taking office, Mayor Reed convened a one-day policy summit, bringing together community stakeholders across a number of different service areas. That group put forth in writing a number of policy priorities and recommendations, which were then distributed to city departments, including HSA, to respond to in writing, describing what we are already doing that addresses those different policy priorities. And so we are working on that written response now. We'll be submitting it next week to the mayor's office. Okay, moving on to program updates. Disaster preparedness. So just a reminder that HSA is the lead agency what's called Emergency Service Function 6, which is provision of mass care and shelter during a major citywide disaster. And so we try to keep regular opportunities available to staff to exercise our disaster response capabilities. And we'll be participating next month in something called the Yellow Command, which is actually a statewide exercise involving, led by the statewide Department of Emergency Services. And it'll be an opportunity here in San Francisco to mobilize city actors from across the different departments, including HSA, to focus on standing up a shelter in the event of a major citywide disaster. So we'll have quite a few staff participating in that exercise.
When will that be? That will be next?
September 6th, I want to say. September 6th. We'd be happy to share additional information with you. Okay, other program updates. So first, for CalFresh and Medi-Cal programs, effective September 1st, we are going to be implementing something called the CalFresh Work Rules for Able-Bodied Adults Without Dependents. I'll actually be giving a more detailed presentation later on the agenda, so I won't say too much about that now. I will say that we held a community forum on this policy change last month, and I want to publicly thank Mr. Yamasaki for attending that event. Also, on the Medi-Cal side, during the next 2 months, we will be undergoing several audits of both the Medi-Cal and the CalFresh programs. The first is scheduled in mid-September. It's an annual state management evaluation review of the CalFresh program, so CDSS, the State Department of Social Services, will be on site conducting that review. The second is the CalFresh single audit, which is a federally required review that will be conducted by the City Controller's Office, and they'll be looking at the appropriateness of our federal claiming of CalFresh dollars, as well as our administration of CalFresh eligibility rules and our CalFresh employment and training contracts. And then finally, sometime during the final quarter of 2018, our Medi-Cal eligibility review process will undergo a review by the State Department of Healthcare Services. So I think by the end of December, we will be all audited out on the CalFresh and Medi-Cal side of our house. Turning to Work Services, a couple of updates on the CalWORKS program. The first is that we recently got official notification from the state that in Federal fiscal year 16-17, San Francisco had the fifth highest work participation rate, WPR, of all 58 counties. That's a big change from a few years ago, and so kudos to our CalWORKS and Workforce Development Division staff who have worked so hard to increase the work participation of our CalWORKS participants. Also related to CalWORKS, in this year's state budget, the legislature provided an additional $24 million in funding for the CalWORKS Housing Support Program. And so we already get about $4.2 million annually in CalWORKS HSP funding, but we've just submitted an application for about another $500,000 so that we'll be able to serve additional families this fiscal year. So we're excited about the availability of new funding, as we clearly have more need than we do funding for rapid rehousing services. Moving to the CAP program, I wanted to share with you that over the next month, CAP, in partnership with our Workforce Development Division, will be revamping how we offer opportunities for educational attainment to our CAP participants. So CAP, of course, is our safety net program for single indigent adults. Right now, we only allow CAP clients to participate in a year of educational activity while receiving aid. The problem is that many vocational certificate programs take 2 years to complete, and so we're extending that timeline to allow 2 years of educational activity. We're also refreshing our partnership with City College of San Francisco to make sure that we have a tighter referral process into City College vocational training programs for CAP, and way for us to monitor their educational progress. We will also be just refreshing our pitch a little bit and really making sure that every CAP client who's interested in self-sufficiency is being not only offered the opportunity for job training and subsidized employment, but also sort of that longer term opportunity to increase their educational attainment. 110 families enrolled in that program. And also, an exciting news from the state, there's going to be new state funding available starting this year to implement nurse home visiting services for CalWORKs families. And so Project 500 was a local initiative, a little bit ahead of the curve in this regard, but now with new state funding being infused, we'll be able to expand that program and serve additional families through Project 500 in the coming years. So we'll be updating you further about that. We're currently drafting our proposal to the state. And then finally, just a couple of personnel-related announcements. Our IT director, Dan Palomares, departed several months ago to take an opportunity at the state. And we have just concluded our hiring process and have hired Natalie Toledo, who was our interim IT director, into that permanent position. So please join me in congratulating Natalie on that appointment.
Well, I was thinking about skipping the Employee of the Month award. Before I read this, I want to let you know that I talked to Gabrielle the other day on the phone. First time I had talked to him, I probably have seen him around over the years, but first time I spoke with him, I immediately got off the phone and decided that I'm going to lose 10 pounds and I'm going to start to work out harder and get into shape, because his enthusiasm over the phone was infectious. So thank you for that little boost. Anyway, I'm pleased to announce that Gabrielle Jones, who's our handbook and training manager with the Welfare to Work Service Division, is the August 2018 Employee of the Month. Gabriel is one of the most enthusiastic, enjoyable people to work with. Gabriel started his career serving our country in the military as a Navy SEAL. Thank you for that, sure. After a long, admirable career with the Navy, Gabriel transformed to a career of serving the community with the Human Service Agency. As the training and handbook supervisor in our Welfare to Work Service Division, he has a difficult but essential job to make the complicated world of social services, policies, and regulations understandable and digestible for all his colleagues. He achieves this through excellent project management, supervision, and analytical skills. He is one of the first people that new staff have the pleasure of meeting when they join CalWORKs and the workforce development. Over the first several weeks that new staff are in induction training, he watches out for each and every one of them to make sure that they are mastering the material. One of the most impressive things about Dave is that he is an expert troubleshooter. He handles last minute hiccups, guest speakers who get sick, computers not working with calm. He manages to stay on top of what seems like hundreds of logical details involving technology, facilities, human resources, and in doing so, he's made many good friends at the Human Service Agency. He's also always there for his team to make sure that they get the opportunity to shine and do interesting work. He is constantly striving to improve the curriculum and the handbook. Gabriel has the best attitude of anybody and is always willing to contribute to any project that he gets called for. We are very lucky to have him, and this Employee of the Month award is very well deserved. His dear wife, Marie Takahashi, is here today to celebrate with him this great accomplishment. Thank you. Your work is highly valued and greatly appreciated. It is with gratitude and pride that we present you as the August 2018 Employee of the Month.
Gabe always has a positive attitude, always says, yes, we can figure out how to do this, and always does, in fact, figure out how to move forward. And then the final word that came to mind was proactive. You do not have to ask Gabriel to do anything twice. The minute you merely suggest that something should be done, he is off and running and coming back to you in short order to report on what's been accomplished. So, Gabe, it's a pleasure to have you as a part of our team. Thank you so much for your work.
Last thing I want to say, but I'm here for serving. Serving those that need help. Serving the poor. That's why I'm here. Thank you.
San Mateo and Santa Clara counties. Thank you, Elizabeth. requirement only applies to a subset of the CalFresh population. Those are ABODs, able-bodied adults without dependents. ABODs are between the ages of 18 and 49 years old, so anybody over age 49 is exempt. There are about 15,000 CalFresh recipients in San Francisco who are in this age range. That's about one quarter of our CalFresh caseload. Of those 15,000, we believe that just under 4,000 are what we call at risk of losing their nutrition benefits. And they're defined as at risk because they are not, to our knowledge, currently meeting the worker participation requirement, nor do we have any information that would lead us to believe that they would qualify for an exemption. So of those 3,900 who are at risk of losing their benefits, about two-thirds of them are male, nearly 90% speak English as their primary language, and in terms of race and ethnicity, they are about a quarter white, 22% African-American, 14% Chinese API, and 13% Latino. When we look at where those at-risk individuals are living within San Francisco, you can see that in this map of the neighborhoods, the darker the shading, the higher the concentration of ABODs. So not surprisingly, we see that our largest concentration is in 94124, which is Bayview Hunters Point, and 94110, which is the Mission. And that they're generally concentrated in the southeast sector of the city, which is not surprising, given that that's where our lowest income residents tend to live. So again, if you are an ABOD, you either need to meet a work requirement or be exempt. The good news is that there are lots of different ways that someone can be exempt from a work requirement. I won't read through all of these, but you can generally see that if someone is homeless, pregnant, in a household with a minor child, has a disability or is caring for somebody with a disability, or is participating in school, employment, training, or treatment, then they can be exempt. We've done some initial screening of our ABODs and believe that the two exemptions that will affect the largest number of clients in San Francisco are living in a household with a minor child or being chronically homeless. In our, I should also say that in addition to being what we call categorically exempt, which is all those criteria that I just walked through, there is some additional flexibility to exempt other clients who are not categorically exempt. So the state will get, the federal government will do a calculation and allocate to the state a number of additional individual exemptions equal to 15% of our at-risk ABOD caseload. And that will allow us to grant those exemptions to clients who would not otherwise be exempt. What this means is that we are hopeful that at least during the first 6 months of implementing this rule, we are hopeful that we will be able to exempt pretty much everybody and that we won't be in a position of having to discontinue anybody from services until, you know, the final quarter of this fiscal year. When we have done some initial preliminary screening of our caseload, we have found that 70 to 75% of those that we screened in a pilot appear to meet one of the exemption criteria. So the takeaway here for our client population is that the vast majority of ABODs will in fact be exempt and continue to be eligible for CalFresh without a time limit. The other 25% will need to meet that work requirement. So let's take a closer look at that. So non-exempt clients need to work at least 20 hours a week or 80 hours a month. They can meet that work requirement in a number of ways. Of course, having a job is one way, but clients can also perform community service or participate in employment training in order to meet the requirement. They can also participate in workfare activities. And for those clients who do workfare, there's actually just a nuance in the rules that allows them to participate for fewer than 20 hours a week, so that's a good option for folks. I'm pleased to say that HSA has done a lot of work kind of reallocating our budget in order to be able to carve out nearly 2,500 job placement activities for the ABOD population. And we'll be doing that through our Jobs Now program. We're when we will be able to offer people subsidized employment, connection to unsubsidized employment, workfare opportunities at other city departments as well as here at HSA, and then placement in job training and job readiness programs. So we are very prepared for this policy change, and I have to say that we are prepared despite the fact that we didn't get any additional state or federal funding to provide employment opportunities for this population. There is some existing federal funding that we can draw down. And then finally, I just wanted to conclude by talking a little bit about our communication strategy and our community partnerships around the AVOD rule. This is a significant policy change. It's going to take time for our clients to understand the change in rules and adjust their behavior to come into compliance with the work requirement. So we have a robust client communication campaign planned. Our first communication started going out in July, and we're trying to communicate with our clients through a variety of channels. So snail mail, but also direct phone calls and text messaging. I mentioned already that in July we held a community stakeholder forum that was attended by over 100 community partners who are now informed about the rule change and will be doing their best to help educate San Francisco residents about the rules and helping them to comply. We've established a number of referral pathways directly between HSA and community service providers who offer job training. We have been doing a lot of outreach to other city departments, including public health, child support, the probation department, the Office of Workforce, Public Works, MTA, all city departments who touch the same client population that we serve. And so they are now informed and engaged and are acting as ambassadors to our shared clients about this policy change. As I already mentioned, we've expanded our public and private workfare sites. Department of Public Works and Muni are our two largest workfare sites aside from HSA, so we're very grateful for their partnership. And then finally, we've been partnering closely with San Francisco Marin Food Bank and United Way 211. We hope that no one loses their nutrition benefits as a result of this policy change, but if they do, we want to make sure that we're getting our clients information about community-based feeding resources so that they can supplement their household food in that way. And then finally, we've developed a new page on the HSA website. The URL is here, which has all kinds of informational resources for clients and community members and service providers. Last thing I guess I would like to do is just publicly thank our staff in the CalFresh program, in our Workforce Development Division, and in our CAP program, because many of our CAP clients are also CalFresh clients. This has really been an all-hands-on-deck effort to plan for this rule change and make sure that as many clients as possible continue to be able to access CalFresh benefits, and they've just done a tremendous job. So I feel very confident that as September 1 gets close, we are ready to implement. Be happy to take any questions you have, commissioners.
Any questions? Item 7 is I'd like to ask for a vote on the consent motion.
Second.
All in favor?
Aye.
Commission of business, item 8. These are our action items. I'm going to call on Ruth Levine. Good morning.
Good morning, Commissioners. I'm Ruth Levine, the Acting Budget Manager for the Human Services Agency. I'm presenting on the Homelessness and Supported Housing Fund, formerly the Human Services Care Fund. This fund pays for housing and services to homeless CAP clients through savings resulting from the implementation of Care Not Cash. The ordinance establishing the fund requires that the Human Services Agency report to this commission on an annual basis on whether its projections for savings for the year were accurate. Before I review this year's projections and actuals, I wanted to briefly explain the Human Service Agency's continued relationship with this fund in light of the creation of the Department of Homelessness and Supported Housing. As you may recall, the savings from Care Not Cash and support this fund result from two sources, from the reductions in the homeless CAP caseload, as well as reduced grants for homeless CAP recipients who are offered shelter. Since our agency continues to administer CAP, we continue to handle the projection and calculation of these savings. Based on these calculations, we then transfer the savings into the Homelessness and Supportive Housing Fund. The Department of Homelessness and Supportive Housing then administers the housing and services for these clients. The savings for fiscal year 2017-2018 were $15,022,109. This amount is $22,240 less than the projected savings at the beginning of the year. And for fiscal year 18-19, the official budget is $15,006,859. This amount is $41,000 more than the current savings projection for the 2018-2019 fiscal year. HSA staff recommends that the Commission adopt the findings regarding the fiscal year 2017-2018 savings for the Homelessness and Supportive Housing Fund and transmit them to the Board of Supervisors and the Office of the Controller. Thank you.
Any questions? The approval of the acceptance of the calculations and the forwarding of the memo to the Clerk of the Board of Supervisors and Controller.
Second.
All in favor?
Aye.
Thank you for your comments.
Thank you.
Mm-hmm. Thank you. On Susie Smith.
Hello, Commissioners. So every year we have to formally adopt our statement of purpose. And essentially, this is our state, local, and federal mandate. So things that are legislatively mandated to do, administer. It doesn't include discretionary programs like Project 500 or other non-mandated programs. So I'll just read this initial sentence, but I'm not going to go through each and every one of our programs. It's not a change from prior years, but just to kind of remind everyone why we're here, our mission and purpose. So the Department of Human Services plans and administers a variety of federal, state, and local programs that are designed, of course, to meet basic needs and to ensure protection of our most vulnerable citizens as required by law, regulation, and mandate. The Department provides children, families, and single adults with money or service support. And of course, this commission provides the oversight for that administration of programs and services. So we've got those CalWORKs, CalFresh, CAP, Medi-Cal, HAPI, our child welfare programs, our family and services programs, working families tax credit, and then through the administrative support side of our functions. I'm happy to answer any questions about the mandate or objectives, but it's not different from prior years. So if there are any questions, I would ask that you formally approve our statement of purpose, for fiscal year 18-19.
Any questions? May I have a motion to approve?
So moved.
Second.
All in favor?
Aye.
Item C, entering a new grant with San Francisco Marine Food Bank, provide health and medical care promotion.
Good morning, Commissioners and President Khan. My name is Jamie Bellamy, manager for HSA's SF Benefits Net program. We're responsible for administering CalFresh and Medi-Cal eligibility. I'm requesting authorization to enter into a new contract agreement with the San Francisco Marin Food Bank to provide CalFresh and Medi-Cal promotion and application assistance services for the period of July 1st, 2018 through June 30th, 2021. The contract amount is $1,063,425 plus a 10% contingency for a total amount not to exceed $1,169,768. The SF Marin Food Bank will provide services that seek to assist in ending hunger and food insecurity in San Francisco by increasing CalFresh participation. State estimates suggest that in San Francisco, approximately two-thirds of those who are likely eligible for CalFresh are enrolled. The Medi-Cal intake is higher, but has trended down slightly in the recent months. The SF Marin Food Bank will provide an array of direct strategies that include application assistance and informational workshops for community members that are likely eligible for CalFresh and Medi-Cal. In addition to the direct service strategies, the San Francisco Marin Food Bank will also utilize an indirect service model by providing training and support to a network of community-based organizations and application assistance to likely eligible individuals. The SF Marin Food Bank will promote benefits to 10,000 households, identify 5,000 households that are likely eligible for CalFresh and Medi-Cal, and provide resources and application assistance to 7,200 households. These strategies aim to increase CalFresh participation and the number of applications that are directed to HSA staff for eligibility determination. Commissioner, I'm happy to answer any questions. Commissioner, you have any questions?
I was struck under the purpose on page 4, a targeted promotive campaign. Mm-hmm. How did that come about? Who set that up? Was that they brought it to us that we needed it, or we put it out there in an RFP and they responded?
We put it out there in RFP for the community to respond. We, I guess, identified certain segments of the population that we wanted to target, mm-hmm. and that we wanted to assist with the company.
Second. Someone
Any other questions? Can I have a motion to approve?
So, second.
Resettled in San Francisco with local services and benefits to improve their self-sufficiency. The current political climate has pushed refugees and other individuals with precarious residency status into a more vulnerable state, exacerbated by skyrocketing housing costs in San Francisco. HSA seeks to link these individuals to available refugee and self-sufficiency resources and services available throughout San Francisco County by doubling the minimum amount of linkages events per month. The grantee will identify eligible clients and make service and benefits referrals tailored to the client's needs. These services will include, but are not limited to, language education and vocational training programs offered by various agencies in the Bay Area. Clients will also be referred to HSA Intake for screening and possible enrollments in CalWORKs, CalFresh, and or Medi-Cal. The grantee will connect this program's clients with workshops on social adjustment, cultural orientation, citizenship activities, and personal finance, among other services in the community. This modification will increase capacity for benefits linkages in events, as well as funding for new print advertisement flyers to expand outreach to clients. Grantee will perform a minimum of 20 benefit linkages events to connect with refugees, asylees, trafficking victims, and or individuals on special immigrant visas every month. Over an annual period, 45 individuals referred through benefits linkages will enroll into HSA services. I'm available to answer any questions regarding services. We've got our whole team from Rico Juntos here, Gladys Garcia, Director of Programs, Victor Magallanes, Gustavo Machon, Reina Tiscareno, and also Giselle Almendarez, the County Refugee Coordinator with HSA is here. We've got a member of the program, of the refugee community here as well.
Well, you got everybody.
You got everybody.
And
yes, I mentioned, yeah.
We have one question.
Yes.
Has requested services increased in the last number of months since the adoption of new immigration policies by the federal government? Have you been having more requests than usual?
It's a good question. The answer is maybe slightly complex because we've seen that refugees over the past year and especially in the the city of San Francisco due to the political climate, due to cost of living, due to policies and the way that the refugee resettlement organizations are working, the specifically refugees with that specific title are not as many in San Francisco as in past years. But one interesting thing is that the asylee population, in terms of people who have been had their asylum applications approved in 2018, in the last few months we've seen that number rise. And part of the reason for that is that the federal funds going to the legal system to approve those asylee cases has actually gone up. So I'm not sure if it'll be a permanent change, but for the short term, the number of asylee cases approved in San Francisco has gone up, and we have started to see some of that trickle down into our enrollments in HSA.
Thank you.
Second.
All in favor?
Aye.
Christina Iwasaki.
Good morning, President Kahn, Commissioners. Christina Iwasaki, Community Services Manager for Rural Urban Services. The Department of Human Services.
Thank you.
The Department of Human Services requests authorization to renew and modify the grant agreement with Five Keys Charter Schools to provide academic support services to CalLearn clients for the period of July 1, 2018 to June 30, 2019 in an additional amount of $18,191 plus a 10% contingency for a total grant amount not to exceed $101,157. The purpose of the grant is to provide academic support services to pregnant and parenting teens who are students in the CalLearn program. The proposed renewal modification will extend the agreement for an additional year. CalLearn is a statewide program for pregnant and parenting teens in the CalWORKS program. It's designed to encourage pregnant and parenting teens to graduate from high school or its equivalent, become independent, and form healthy families. The program provides comprehensive case management and linkages to a wide range of supportive services, including medical care, job counseling, housing, legal services, and parenting education. The grantee will assess each student's educational needs and determine an appropriate service plan through individual and small group sessions as appropriate. Services will include transcript evaluation, educational counseling, GED assessment, individual GED instruction, assistance with enrollment or re-enrollment in San Francisco Unified School District schools or other educational programs. And then they will also provide consultation and guidance to CalWORKS case managers as it relates to the development and achievement of their clients' educational goals, in-service trainings on topics related to education and orientations for new case managers. This modification will serve 15 CalLearn participants annually. I'm available to answer any questions, and representatives from Five Keys and CalWORKS CalLearn program are here as well.
I'm curious to know why the contract with the charter school rather than the public education system.
These are academic counseling services.
Yeah, so Commissioner, your question was why the contract with the charter school rather than the public education
services.
Right, so I believe that many of the counter participants are actually enrolled in Hilltop High School, which is a public school. The Five Keys services are supplemental academic support and counseling tutoring services.
Can I have a motion to approve?
So moved.
Second. All in favor?
Aye.
Comprehensive plan to improve recruitment and retention of foster parents. So we're seeking modification of the contract at an $897,764 for a revised amount of $1,087,684,000 with a contingency of $103,768 for a total of $1.141 million. And as you know, having a set of quality foster parents that are in San Francisco has been a long-standing issue for us. It's probably one of our, one of our biggest priorities is to get more homes, and it's been our biggest challenge. We've been consistently placing over the years about between 60 and 65% of our youth outside of San Francisco, about 25% of them outside of the Bay Area. And you can imagine what this does for a good youth. When they're removed from their home, they're also removed from their community. And also it presents great challenges for the families who are trying to reunify with their children if they're placed outside of the county. And it produces great strain on our system to provide services to the youth out in the county and to get out to see the youth, to work with the youth when they're placed so far out of the county. Now some of these youth are in relative homes and we want to encourage that. So some of that's inevitable, but a significant portion of them are not in relative homes. And this contract's aim to help recruit more homes here to alleviate that problem. So beginning in 2017, you approved the initial phase of this contract, and it was part of our sort of larger strategy to build infrastructure and get ready to really improve our recruitment strategy. We did a few things. We built a new and beautiful website, sfcaresforkids.org, that I've probably seen. And we automated the process for approval so that people could do it online. That was separate from this. We also built a recruitment team that's really engaged with our staff and our partners to go out and recruit families using all kinds of creative methods. And we started this contract with Resource Development Associates. They conducted community-based research, an environmental scan, to look within San Francisco to identify both what people understood about our challenges and what people understood about foster care, and which communities might be untapped resources that we could tap into, and what messages might resonate with them to make them take the next step to become foster parents. So they completed that in the next fiscal year, and this renewal and extension of the contract takes it to the next phase. So this allows us to build a comprehensive recruitment strategy based on the research that our recruitment team can dig into and execute. And the bulk of the money, because it's so expensive, is a comprehensive media strategy and communication strategy. A lot of it is media buys, which thanks to our new website, we've got a lot of analytics on it, and we're gonna be able to buy them, analyze them, see if they're effective, modify them if they weren't effective to maximize their effectiveness, and then buy them and test them over time. So we won't be just spending the media money with media buys without testing and looking to see if it's effective. We also, our partners at Juvenile Probation are here because they looked at what we were doing, and they also have a need for quality foster parents for youth in their system who are in foster care. So about 187,000 of this is from them, work order to us, so that we can work together. We partner with them extensively. They are here, and we also have our partners here from Resource Development Associates, Amelia Friedman, and I believe some of Linda Bach. They're here to answer any questions, as am I.
I have a quick question. And Sean, would please add something to this if you'd like. How does this work between you, Sean, as being the person that handles the communications directly through the agency?
Good morning, great question. A lot of the work that we do in the communications team in partnership with Joe, who works very closely with Family and Children's Services, is we really work as in-house consultation for all of the programs that are delivered here across the agency. So the media plan that is going to be executed through this contract. Joe and I are at the table with Family and Children's Services, reviewing the media plans, the messaging, and then looking forward on monitoring the analytics, as he mentioned, and really seeing how that's translating into conversion of more resource family home applications. So we work, you know, repeatedly with different programs and services. We have partnerships with CalFresh, we worked on the Avon Community Forum. That's a lot of the work that we do here at the agency.
Does it need your final, well, the entire approval here, but does it need your approval as the communications person? Anything that's related, I would assume.
Yeah, approval is one way to see it. I mean, we definitely work really closely with everyone, and we ask that before any of these contracts move forward, or when we actually move forward with securing any funding towards these advertisements, that people do need to work in partnership with the communications team. So those relationships have been established. So Joe and I have probably, I don't know how many hours we've spent working with RDA to refine it. We were definitely at the table throughout the full development of this. Yeah.
Thank you.
Sure.
Are these the representatives of the RDA?
Yes.
This is a non-substantive comment. you could interpret it. I was just surprised to see in your written material that zip code 94115 is characterized as Japantown. And Japantown is just a small and, I prefer to say, fading portion of 94115. I have always, in my time here in San Francisco, considered 94115 the Western Addition. So, as I say, this is has nothing to do with the program, but it just was a mild surprise to me that Japantown has become the I don't know what to call it, identifying point of 94115.
Thank you.
Any other questions or comments? Can I have a motion to approve?
Second.
All in favor?
Aye.
Thank you.
Thank you.
Pamela South Cedar.
I have two names. I'm here today presenting for Pam. She's unavailable, so you give me. Robbie Lerner. Good morning, President Kahn and fellow commissioners. I'm happy to see you today, and I'm pleased to be here to seek your authorization to enter into a modification for an existing contract with Community Works West. They provide our incarcerated parent services. As you know, child welfare is mandated to ensure, whenever possible, to facilitate visits with our child welfare-involved families and their children. Community Works West will assist and use this additional increase in funding to hire a halftime coordinator who will support the facilitation process, case consultation with PSWs, as well as other peer support activities. San Francisco currently has three facilities that families are incarcerated with, and what we found over the last couple of years is that one person cannot be in all three jails to support these visits, as well as field questions from our PSWs. Currently, Family and Children's Services has over 220 families incarcerated. Of those, 136 are located in or housed in San Francisco Sheriff Department facilities. Community Works West has been a partner with us for a number of years, and they have a significant presence and a solid reputation in working with the Sheriff's Department to provide these services. They are also an anchor partner in a collaborative body of which the Sheriff Department co-chairs in order to improve visitation services for incarcerated families. Additionally, Community Works West exceeded all of their contract objectives and basically based their monitoring visit. We are so happy to have them as a partner with us in doing this work, and we look forward to future working relationships, given your approval of this contract. I'm happy to answer any questions you may have regarding the services or the information contained in your commission memo.
Any questions?
Second.
All in favor?
Aye.
Thank you very much.
Lara Gatto, requesting authorization to enter an agreement with the St. Vincent Paul Society of San Francisco and to provide domestic violence intervention services.
Good morning, Commissioners. My name is Alec Delorco. I am a program co-analyst with Family and Children Services. Today I'm here to request the authorization to enter into a new grant agreement with the St. Vincent de Paul Society of San Francisco for the period beginning July 1st, 2018 and June 30th, 2019. The contract amount is $331,376 with a 10% contingency for the total amount not to exceed $364,513. The purpose of the grant is to provide support services to families involved in child welfare systems that are also experiencing domestic violence. Domestic violence impacts many of our families. It is estimated that about 30-60% of families involved in child protective services are also facing issues related to domestic violence. And children who are exposed to domestic violence are at elevated risk of experiencing negative life outcomes, such as depression, substance use disorder, difficulty in school, and tolerance for use of violence. And services provided under this grant agreement is intended to mitigate these adverse effects by providing support and resources needed to promote the safety of both parents and children, and also reduce the risk of referral to CPS. And specifically, grantee will provide domestic violence intervention services, including home visits, counseling and guidance, service referrals, and short-term case management services for low to mid-risk cases. With that, I'm happy to answer any questions you may have. And we have Ulysses Zatarain and Emmanuel Carey from St. Vincent de Paul to answer any questions.
Any questions? Can I have a motion to approve?
Is this the first time that we provide these services? Or is this the first time we've done the same thing?
We have been contacting and partnering with St. Vincent de Paul, I believe, since 2005. So we have the same contract, this menu RFP cycle, and they are selected to provide these services.
I have a motion to approve. Second?
Second.
All in favor?
Aye.
So moved.
Thank you.
Item I, A Better Way Incorporated.
I am requesting the authorization to renew the grant agreement with A Better Way Inc. for the period beginning July 1st, 2018 through June 30th, 2020. In the amount of $1,292,268, plus a 10% contingency for the total amount not to exceed $1,421,495. The purpose of this grant agreement is to provide peer-to-peer mentoring services to support families that are involved with both Family and Children Services and Juvenile Probation Department. A Better Way Peer Parent Program employs and trains peer parent advocates who have successfully navigated the child welfare juvenile probation system. And because of their life experience and personal knowledge of the system, these advocates are uniquely qualified to work with parents to gain their trust, to help them access services and navigate the requirements of the respective system. And under this joint program between Family and Children Services and Department of Juvenile Probation, a team of peer parent advocates provides a number of individualized support services such as advocacy and accompaniment, resource referrals, and support groups to help families develop and maintain protective capacity among well-being of their children. With that, I'm happy to take any question you may have.
Any questions on item 5? All in favor?
Aye. Thank you.
Moving on to public comment. I see no public comment, so I will hear you.